Well, good morning. At 8 minutes after 5 o'clock here on this Saturday morning, we say welcome to the Saturday Morning Show. Orion Samuelson with you, and I'll be joined by Max Armstrong and Mike Pearson just during the next hour. And we came through this week and survived up here, these hurricanes and the activity in some of the cities and towns of the Midwest, certainly holding the news spotlight. And, of course, we continue to get the coronavirus count. One of the first things I now look at in the morning when I come on the air, and the worldwide coronavirus cases are now at 24,600,000, and the death toll from the coronavirus worldwide is 832,804. No hurricanes this morning. And looking at my temperatures and rain gauge here in Huntley, Illinois, no rainfall measured overnight, at least in our backyard. And the current temperature, 68 degrees. That's a little bit cooler than we've seen so far this week. But Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue will check in with Max a little bit later to take a look at some of the situations from weather that has damaged or hindered the development of the crop. And, of course, Mike Pearson will be here with Naomi Bloom to talk about markets. So a lot going on. And then there's this guy named Jim Fizell, who has been around for a long time, and he's going to check in to sort of start wrapping up the garden season for the year 2020, although we still are not at the official start of autumn. So the meteorological start, however, came this week. So that's what's going on, and we'll keep you posted on that. Thank you for joining us here on the Saturday Morning Show. And we'll talk gardening with Jim when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. Well, the question for a lot of people is, where did the summer go? Because we're coming to the end of the year as far as the gardening season is concerned, and so we still have an opportunity to talk to Jim Fizell, specialist with for ornamental horticulture here on WGN Radio. And Jim, you got a little bit of rain in Park Ridge this week.
Yes, we did. It was not predicted. They said it would miss us, but we did get just a little less than a half inch, which we desperately needed. Unfortunately, it's pretty well gone by now. It didn't do much good. It did a little. It did help the lawns a little bit, not to turn them green, but to keep the crowns from desiccating. We always tell people, if they let their grass grow dormant every week or two, you need to put a quarter of an inch or so of water on there just to hydrate the crowns so that they stay alive. And then when you get a lot of water, a lot of rain, or decide to really irrigate heavily, those things are going to begin growing. But, yeah, the season is dwindling. It's hard to believe. I was talking to Bob Ferguson, our engineer, just a little bit ago about the fact that when he gets up early in the morning, it's dark now. And there was a time not too long ago when it was light that time of the morning. 4:30 in the morning, the sun was beginning to come up. The sky was getting a little bit brighter. Now it's dead dark by that. It's the middle of the night. Nonetheless, the season is winding down, but there's still a lot of stuff to do. It's time to evaluate the season. You know, we had a lot of first-time gardeners this year. I visited with the garden centers and people that sell plants and so forth. Some of them have never had a better year. Our good friend Lee Gobert out there in Barrington, I visited with him. He said that he was out of plants so early in the season, he was looking for stuff to get. He grows his own, but he was trying to find stuff to buy so that he could keep providing his customers, because the season wasn't nearly over when they'd run out of plants. Well, that's good for gardening, but it does mean that there are a lot of first-time gardeners. And when we have first-time gardeners, it's easy for them to get discouraged. So I want to talk a little bit about that. The first thing I want to think about is that it's easy to get discouraged if the season hasn't gone well. Many times it's not really your fault. Also, when you're beginning something, I don't care what you start, They're going to make mistakes. You're going to learn things as you go. Gardening is not an end. Getting that tomato picked isn't the end of things. Gardening is a journey, and we're all on that. Those of us who garden start out knowing virtually nothing, and as we go year by year, we begin to learn things to the point that after a number of years, we become experts. Even if we're not professional experts, we're experts within our neighborhood. And the people that are beginning the garden go look to the seasoned gardeners to find out how you do things. One thing you need to consider is, did you bite off more than you could chew this year? A lot of people have a lot of ideas about the things they can grow, and they look at the ads and the catalogs, and gosh, we can start this and that. We always tell people, start with a 10-by-10 garden. That's big enough. If you started with something bigger than that, it takes a lot more work, and you are going to make a lot more mistakes. It's going to be a lot more difficult to do it. Another thing that you have to remember is this season has not been particularly kind. The weather started out cool and wet, not the best for starting a garden or for farming as well. Soils are hard to work. They can't be worked when they're wet. If you do get things planted, seedlings and so forth begin to drown. Seedlings may not even come up. Plants that you plant turn yellow and waste away because the soil is just too wet. Eventually, things do dry out, and if you can be a little bit patient and not plant too early, that can result in some pretty nice plants. Now, it was hot in June, and then it became dry, so it was difficult to keep plants watered. You can't grow plants, garden plants in particular, in this area very successfully on a year like this unless you give those plants some water. So you need to do that, and you need to keep track. If they start wilting, you need to get out there and put water on them. They don't grow when it's wilting, and in fact, when they're wilting, if they wilt too long, they begin to deteriorate because the stomates close up in the leaves. It's a little bit technical, but there's no photosynthesis going on when these plants are wilted, so the carbohydrate that keeps them alive isn't new carbohydrate. They're digesting a part of the plant. And this year it was hot in June. It was hot in July and August. Has been pretty well this entire month of August. The rains have been spotty, as we talked about. You got no rain, I got a half inch. It's kind of droughty in a lot of places. I don't know what the Palmer Index is, but it's got to be beginning to show that we are in a drought. Other things to consider, if you started out with plants, where did you get them? Where did you buy them? Did you get them from a garden center, or did you buy them from some person that had plants that they were just trying to get rid of? You need to know where they came from because, first of all, the varieties may not be the best for the area. Also, many times when people just buy indiscriminate plants, they're going to bring things in like whitefly, a bug that really causes a lot of problems in gardens. They can bring in some diseases and so forth. If you happen to do this, it's your fault that you bought these things, but it was an uninformed person that sold them to you as well. Another thing you need to consider, did you use the things that you grew in your garden? You know, if your kids don't like eggplant or you don't like eggplant, did you grow eggplant? It makes a beautiful plant, and these fruits are so nice. But you need to plant things and grow things that you're going to use. Weeds. Weeds are the bane of all gardeners. I don't care if they're new gardeners, old gardeners, or what. There's always weed seed in the ground. And actually, in new gardens, there's more weed seed than ever because nobody's been out there cultivating them out. It's a challenge to keep them under control, and it's often one of the reasons people quit gardening. But you don't want to do that. As soon as weeds begin to grow, you need to take care of getting them out of there. And the old ho-ho-ho system is the best of all. A garden hoe works better than anything. You get out in the morning or in the evening, walk through your rows. You know, in the old times, farmers used to walk their rows. They would chop the weeds out as well. That's a long-gone procedure, but we still talk about walking the rows with your garden hoe. You need to keep them under control. Bugs have not really been much of a problem this year, but there are other pests that have been problematic. Rabbits, they eat off the flowers. They eat off the young seedlings that are coming up. They eat your ground covers, so forth. Squirrels, some seem to take a liking for tomatoes and squash and other nice fleshy vegetables. They'll take a bite out of them, may even take them off the plant, but they don't eat them. They just take a chunk out of it and decide, well, I don't like that, and they throw it away. But the crazy animals come back the next day and do the same thing over again. Birds also can be a problem because they will peck holes in fruit, particularly bright red tomatoes, or things like strawberries or raspberries. They'll pick them off, and they're particularly fond of cherries. So if you have any of those and the birds have been a problem, that's not your fault. That's the way it is. There are some things you can do to eliminate or reduce the problems. We put fences up for rabbits. Squirrels, as I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, I have a little trap that I use to catch them. They love peanut butter. And you relocate them someplace away from your garden. Jane's always worried that they're going to find their way back. I don't think they do, but there may be others from the periphery that move in. But maybe they don't like tomatoes, so they're not a problem. Now, most of us who've gardened for a lot of years have kept this year in perspective. Even though it wasn't the best of a gardening year, we have many good years of experience. And when you begin to develop these good years, bad years don't look so bad. So consider this year a bit of a challenge, but don't give up. So if this is your first year, don't be disappointed. You need to keep some records of this year. What did you plant? And we mentioned varieties. Where did you get them? What varieties did you try? Did they work out? Did they not work out? Record the ones that didn't work either. It's just as important to record the things that don't work as the things that do work, because you don't want to make the same mistake over again. Now, I've done that in the past, and that was one of the reasons I started journaling, because I planted beans that didn't work. The next year, I planted the same variety over again. You know what? It didn't work the next year either, so I never planted those again. So you do need to record what worked and what did not work. You also need to record what the weather was like. If you have a similar spring as we've had this year, eventually if you look back at your notes, you'll find out, yep, this is what we can expect. And do record what went wrong. Begin to make plans for next year. Don't give up. Once you start gardening, it kind of infects you, and you need to do it each year. Make plans for a garden that's smaller if your garden was too big, starting at a different time, getting your plant material or your seeds from someplace else. But make the plans so that next year you'll have a successful garden, and it will be a little bit more successful this year, maybe a lot more successful, and you can congratulate yourself that you did something good and it worked and that you learned something. That's one of the things about gardening. We always learn, because no 2 years are exactly alike, and no matter how long we've been gardening, we always run into difficult years and difficult or different problems that we have to solve. It's always interesting, and we're always optimistic, because there's always another year coming on, and we look forward to it.
And I hope we don't have a COVID-19 year after this growing season, although that probably, because it keeps people at home, has encouraged more people to do what you suggest, to garden. Oh, and then, you did mention keep a journal. Any idea how many years you go back with your gardening journals?
You know, it's interesting that you ask that. The earliest entries I have in my journal are in 1974. Now, I can remember that I had another journal before that, but it's gone the way of history someplace. But 1974 is where I started on the current one. It's just a ring binder, a spiral binder. And at the top of the page, I put the date, the year. And as I work through the season, I put the date on the left side as what's going on. I record what's happening and keep those year after year so you can go back and look. And also, it's interesting to go back when you say, what happened in 1988 when we had all that drought? It was a terrible dry year. How'd things do? Well, I haven't looked back to see that, but it's in there. I know it's in there because I did record it, and I can go back and look at it. So it's fun. And in the wintertime, sometimes when it's snowy outside and you want to think about your garden, you can go in there and you can say, oh, yeah, look, that's what happened there. Wasn't that great? Good memories.
Well, indeed, and good memories having you on every week during the growing season for gardens. And it's not over yet, so we'll be back to visit with you again next week, okay?
You bet. I'll be here.
Jim Fazell, he's our specialist in ornamental horticulture and, well, just about any plants that grow in your backyard. And always good to have Jim with us here on this Saturday morning show. It's 26 minutes after 5 o'clock here on the Saturday morning show, and we've cooled down a little bit from this week at least. Right now, my thermometer in Huntley, Illinois says 68 degrees, and no measured rain on my rain gauge, so I know there was rain in some areas of the Midwest, but we didn't get any on our lawn here in Huntley, Illinois. The developments in world trade continue to be interesting, at least to me, because of a story that came out this week that Taiwan, remember Taiwan? That's the separate island of China, and it's not included in the Chinese communist government, but it's a separate entity. And we had trade relations with Taiwan that were very good. As a matter of fact, I traveled to Taiwan probably three or four times to meet with trade representatives and talk about increasing trade. And that irritated mainland China because they were wanting to do away with Taiwan, and we saw them as a good customer. Interesting announcement this week that Taiwan has paved the way for an eventual free trade deal with the United States. That happened yesterday when the Taiwan Island announced an easing of restrictions on the import of U.S. beef and pork as the island looks to boost its ties with Washington at a time of tensions with mainland China. Taiwan has long sought a free trade agreement with the United States, the most important supporter on the international stage, but Washington has complained about barriers to access for U.S. pork and beef. Taiwan said that was for health reasons, especially with concerns, you remember this, over mad cow disease and the use of additives to produce more quality meat. But the president of Taiwan said her government planned to allow the import of U.S. pork containing ractopamine, an additive that enhances leanness, and allow in U.S. beef more than 30 months old. So that decision, the president said, is in line with the country's overall interests and the goals of the nation's strategic development. It's also a decision that could boost ties between Taiwan and the United States. She said, if we can take one crucial step forward on the issue of U.S. pork and beef, it will be an important start for Taiwan-U.S. economic cooperation at all fronts. And so we're going to get some more of our pork and beef into Taiwan, and it'll be interesting to see how much farther we go in trade relations with that island nation that has stood independently of the communist mainland China government for decades, really. And I know that when Taiwan would send a trade mission to the United States, we'd have the opportunity to meet with them. And I sat in on many meetings with those trade missions from the island nation of Taiwan to the United States. And they were a strong ally, and they considered us a strong ally to them. So it'll be interesting to see what that means and what it will do for the pork and beef producers of the United States. We're at the 5:30 mark here on the Saturday morning show, and we'll take a break for news, and then we'll be back. We're at 25 minutes before 6 o'clock here on the Saturday morning show, and that means it's time for Samuelson Says. I'm Orion, and this week talking about the end of the political conventions. Finally, the political conventions have come to an end, and we know whose names will be on the ballot when we vote on Tuesday, November 3rd. The conventions did remind me of a question that was asked of me several years ago at the National FFA Convention by an FFA member who asked, "Mr. Samuelson, name your favorite Democratic president and your favorite Republican president." Well, during my career as a reporter, I have personally interviewed 9 presidents, so my answer was partially based on those interviews. My answer on the Democratic president was quick and easy. Without question, Harry Truman, who probably made more major decisions while in the White House than any other occupant. Those decisions included dropping the atomic bomb on Japan to bring the war to an end, drafting the surrender terms for World War II, and then having to fire a real hero of World War II, General Douglas MacArthur. But my Republican choice is more challenging because I had three possible choices, but settled on Ronald Reagan, the great communicator. During his term, we saw the end of the Cold War and the Soviet Union, and we also saw the tearing down of the Berlin Wall and his end-of-the-day meetings with the Democratic leader, Senator Tip O'Neill, to reach agreement on issues in Congress. You know, as I reflect on presidents, I wonder why anybody would really want that job. Because whatever decision he or she makes, they will upset people, create controversy, be heavily criticized, and, as we learned in 1963, become the target of an assassin. I'm grateful. There are people who are willing to sacrifice their private life to lead the country and the world. I know I wouldn't want the job, but I wish the victor in November success and good health. My thoughts on Samuelson Says. A presentation of the Nexstar Media Group here at 22 minutes before 6 o'clock. And I would just add to what I had to say, make sure you vote on Tuesday, November 3rd. So the market's always fascinating, particularly with the weather situation we have had. And so let's check in with another market analyst that we call on frequently, Naomi Bloom, and she sat down this week with Mike Pearson.
Joining us this week to help us make sense of the commodity markets is Naomi Bloom from Total Farm Marketing. And Naomi, has the damage from the Iowa derecho been priced into the market as good as it can be for now?
The storm damage has definitely been priced in as good as it can be for now. Of course, as the farmers continue to go into the fields, they're going to be finding out if the corn is moldy, if it's harvestable, or if they're going to be having to disk it under. And so that's been the biggest theme. But surprising the market this week has been more of the continued heat and lack of rain that's hitting the Midwest. And the market is starting to really look at and consider significant yield loss for both corn and soybeans. And that's what's been pushing the market higher this week. And then when the hurricane hit, and it sounded like the rain from the remnant hurricane was going to just be taking a hard right and going across the Delta rather than coming north, that lent extra support to both corn and soybean futures.
So, Naomi, we are getting down here to kind of time to fish or cut bait, especially when it comes to old crop corn sales as growers are cleaning out the bins. Given this recent rally we're having, how should growers be handling the marketing of those bushels that have been left over?
It's a very important time frame with the marketplace. First notice day for September futures is Monday, so price or roll is coming up pretty quick. If you have corn that you need to move, do price it, but you're going to want to re-own it on paper, so make sure you're working with your market advisor on strategies appropriate for you. If this lack of rain continues and if the global demand continues also at the pace that it's been occurring, we have the possibility now, all of a sudden, to see prices work higher, primarily because of yield loss. But again, that demand is strong. I mean, just today, China bought 747,000 metric tons of corn for new crop. So that appetite demand is so strong in the export market, and our domestic demand has been hanging in there as well.
Well, now, all of that being said, we've also seen some pretty strong sales of sorghum into China. Given the discount of American corn to China and the, frankly, availability of it as we sit here today, what do you make of China's recent purchases of grain sorghum?
Well, I think they need grain. I think they need it in any form that they can get it, and they don't want to let the market get too excited if they overbuy one specific commodity, so they're spreading it out. They've bought one-tenth of our sorghum crop, and they've been buying our winter wheat. They've been buying, of course, corn and soybeans as well. So there is definite demand there. And with the sorghum market, I think you're going to see that basis continue to be stronger. I think sorghum is going to be a continued buy for China in the future because they have that import quota that they're constricted to with corn. So sorghum is a way for them to get around that restriction. And the quality, of course, is great for U.S. sorghum.
Now, as you take a look at new crop corn, for those growers that are feeling a little more confident in their yields than perhaps some Iowa growers who were hit by the wind, how should they be marketing new crop, given the fact that we are seeing very strong demand and we do have some question marks about yield?
Yeah, so right now we've got December corn futures up near 360, and 363 is heavy resistance on that December chart. That's the 200-day moving average, and that's also a retest of the summer highs. So this is a good price point to get a little bit more current on sales because, like you said, some places are going to have really good yields and some places aren't, and we won't know that for a couple months.
Now
I would say, ready though, if prices can get through that 363 area, that resistance area, because the funds are still short, they actually decided to go long, there is some upside potential. 375 would be the next target, and you could argue why $4 futures could be a potential target as well.
You talked about the recent dryness. I've heard from a lot of growers who said their soybeans were looking good, but now they're filling out pods on an empty tank. How is the market adjusting their yield expectations for new crop soybeans?
You're seeing that happen right now in the marketplace. The November futures contracts were able to climb above 925, and that was significant. That was the resistance price from March, pre-COVID levels. And the marketplace right now is really trying to understand where that yield is at. We are hearing producers in Illinois tell us that the pods are aborting. We're hearing producers in Iowa tell us that some of those pods have only one, maybe two beans in the pod. And because of the August heat, and because of the lack of rain throughout the Midwest this August, we're seeing and hearing of yield potential really declining quickly. And there was hope that this hurricane was going to save the day and bring the needed rain. But now it's perceived as too little, too late, and not getting to the areas of the Midwest that need it the most.
So,
the thing to remember with is that if the yield gets to be less than 50 bushels to the acre, our ending stocks drop to 335 million bushels. And that's a really big game changer. And if the yield by chance comes in less than 50 bushels to the acre, we got a serious situation on our hands.
Well, we certainly do. And that's just the supply side. You know, we talked about China's insatiable demand for grains in the first segment, but we've also seen incredibly strong demand for China from soybeans. Do you anticipate that to continue as we get into the heart of harvest season?
I do think that we continue to see it. I think that they'll be purchasing little bits at a time as they have been. But keep in mind, there's already been news that emerged this week that South America is expected to have potential for another record crop based on acres that they're going to be planting. Of course, a lot can happen yet with weather. But then also today we found out that China is trying to work with Russia and trying to work some soybean production there. So their logistical issues, and I think where their growing region is at, might be tricky for them to grow soybeans. But if they're starting that initiative, that just tells you that the demand from China is there and they're wanting to make sure that that product is able to be secured. But in the meantime, it bodes well for our soybean prices and our soybean demand. So really keep an eye on those prices, because if we can continue to work higher, the next target higher on November beans is 950 for futures, and then 975, which would be a retest of the January highs. So quite a difference when you consider that the crop progress tours were showing how the pods were really there. The potential was definitely there for this crop. But because of this August heat and no rain, things are shifting quickly.
Now, given the fact that there are so many uncertainties, how should growers be marketing this crop here ahead of those combines rolling through the fields?
Yeah, so it is a tricky thing because you want to be aggressive potentially with your cash marketing needs. But at the same time, if you're in a situation where you're really not sure what you're going to be growing, how do you want to forward contract that? So instead, if you have unpriced bushels, consider some put strategies to protect and give yourself a floor. But at the same time, if you've been making cash sales, do be willing to look at reownership ideas in case this market continues to go higher until we know for sure what the yield potential is out there. Next USDA report isn't for 2 to 3 weeks yet, so we've got some time for the market to kind of figure out and digest and think where yield might be.
For reownership, would you look at November or would you look farther out?
I would actually go further out. I think you want to have time to January or March to make sure that you get through all of harvest. If you go to the March contracts, then you can get through the January USDA report and South American growing conditions.
Well, thank you so much, Naomi Bloom from Total Farm Marketing.
It's 13 minutes before 6 o'clock news time here on WGN Radio, and every time I hear the Ishnala commercial, it's a great place to be because I've been there many times, and not only is the food great, but also the views are pretty good, too, up in the Wisconsin Dells area. Nice to have them on board for a long time here on WGN Radio Chicago. And as we watch the weather this week, we know about the temperatures here in the Midwest, but we were really watching the path that the hurricane that moved into the Gulf would take, because as I've mentioned several times in previous years when we have had hurricanes come into the Gulf, they finally come on land and they track north and generally follow the Mississippi River. And they did for us, well, a short while this week, but nothing like we've seen in past weeks. And those areas that were hoping to get rain, like me in my backyard, we didn't get it because of the different path that the hurricane took when it came on board. There was mention of Chinese buying this week, and I was again just looking at the amount of grain that they did buy this week, and let me go over those numbers again. They've been aggressively importing beef, pork, and poultry this year after the years-long battle with African swine fever that wiped out much of the hog population in China. And China, by the way, and I've said this many times, but I'll say it again, the biggest producer and consumer of pork. But in a separate report on Thursday of this week, the USDA said China bought 747,000 tons of U.S. corn for the current marketing, or the marketing season that begins tomorrow. And the deals came amid a string of sales to China, which vowed to make record U.S. agricultural purchases this year as part of its Phase 1 agreement deal signed with the United States in January. But, some pretty sizable purchases of corn and even some sorghum, some pork, some beef that will move from our farms to the farms of China. And by the way, we do get the end of the trading contract that will require some action on the part of farmers, as Naomi was mentioning, in marketing some of that corn and soybeans still in farm bins here in the United States. But some of that production disappeared a couple of weeks ago with the derecho and the other weather situations occurring here in the United States. And Max Armstrong had the opportunity to sit down for a moment or so with Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue. And Max, the topic, I take it, was the crop situation and some of the damage.
These late season weather-related disasters, Orion, have been getting the attention of the Agriculture Secretary. Sonny Perdue talked with me about it this week, about the derecho in Iowa, and of course the hurricane damage in the South.
It's heartbreaking, first of all, to work all year long to get a crop right before it's going to go in the bins and to have this kind of damage go on. You know, you got 250 bushels of corn out there just waiting to be harvested, and you see it lying flat on the ground. You can't really describe that kind of emotion. But the fact is, farmers are so resilient. It's not just something we talk about. They keep getting up, whether it's west weather or pest or disaster or floods last year or anything. They just keep on keeping on. And the other thing is, I think we've developed through the Farm Bill a very good safety net. Now, does that really contemplate total disaster like we see in some parts of Iowa? Not really. That's when we need to step up and recognize that there are disaster provisions, and we're working on that even as we speak. We're waiting on an assessment from Iowa and a county-by-county assessment and what those needs are. But that's really what I talk about when I ask who's subsidizing who. Much of the world says farmers are subsidized. By my calculation, with the lower food cost in America, farmers are subsidizing American consumers to the tune of over $800 billion a year compared to other developed countries.
Our entire food chain is important. We were reminded this year, and the packing and processing industry, you talk about resilience and response. That really was remarkable back in the spring, wasn't it?
It was absolutely remarkable. Obviously, it's not just our farmers and producers, but they rely on the upward supply chain all the way to the consumer. And that was very much threatened in that way. It's such an efficient supply chain. When we saw our institutional food setting shut down almost overnight, then the pivot to getting the food where it needed to be was critical. And certainly with the COVID infections that we saw in our plants, and we do believe still that much of those infections, coronavirus infections, were brought into the plant, didn't originate in the plant, were brought there. But the way in working with the companies, working with local, state, and public federal health authorities, the V bottom on that was just, again, miraculous in that way and getting back up there. Can you imagine the panic that would have occurred and we had no food in the meat cases around the country?
It was a little bit unnerving for some of us to go to the dairy case and see only briefly. There was nothing there. The cupboard was bare. It was a stark reminder to us, was it not, of the importance of our ag industry?
No question about it. I think many people now appreciate and respect the food supply chain more than they may have ever had.
Given the effect that we have seen on agriculture, livestock sector, for example, the dairy folks, can we anticipate some more assistance coming along from Washington?
We're working on really CFAP 2 now that deals with that $14 billion of CCC that was replenished. We hope to come out with those rules very soon. Sign up will probably be the end of this month or the first of after Labor Day in that area. I think that'll make many people happier since there was that April 15th cliff cutoff, particularly in cattle and livestock, that occurred. We think more people will like where we go from there. We've indicated to Congress that we think there's still another $20, $25 billion need out there, and that doesn't even include many of the processing industries have been hurt.
The thoughts of Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue, Orion, as we visited earlier this week.
And thank you for that visit and for sharing the thoughts of the Secretary with our audience here on the Saturday morning show. And we're coming up to the end of the Saturday morning show and moving into news when we continue here on the program. In this unusual summer of postponements and cancellations, we continue to do a lot of activity if it is taking place. We continue to do it virtually. As a matter of fact, we would be looking forward to the Sandwich Fair at Sandwich, Illinois next week. Won't happen because of the COVID-19 situation. And along with that, it's going to be interesting to see what happens to the other events that we have scheduled for later this year, like state conventions of farm bureaus. They normally take place the closing months of the year, but I'm guessing that they're going to be conducted virtually. And Farm Progress Show at Boone, Iowa, and the Husker Harvest Days at Grand Island, Nebraska, we already know they will be done virtually. As a matter of fact, just make note that the Farm Progress Show and Husker Harvest Days will be at the same time in September, September 15, 16, and 17, and we'll talk about access to the virtual presentations of those important shows to agriculture. So it's been a different summer. We hope that we don't have to go through it again next year for many reasons, but we'll keep you posted on what's going to happen and what's not going to happen in a auditorium, the National FFA Convention, for example, in Indianapolis, will not be held in the facility this year. It will take place virtually, and you will have an opportunity to watch and listen to that virtual presentation. So once again, thanks to you for joining us here on the Saturday Morning Show. Thanks to Bob Ferguson, our engineer, who does such a good job with making it all happen. And have a great week.